Good morning, church family. This is Pastor Elson. Today's message is entitled, It's You. It is hopefully that by the end of this message, you will have the confidence that the Lord has pointed His finger towards you and saying to you, it is you. You are the focus of all my attention, all my love, and all my blessings. To be chosen is an honor, is a privilege to many things in life. Sometimes we hope not to be chosen. Sometimes we ask, please pick somebody else. But in many cases in life, when somebody chooses us, people honor us with their choice, with their confidence. And the Bible text for this morning, and I chose the NIV version for this particular case. I don't know if you notice, but if you look in your bulletin, you notice that you is mentioned 7 times in these 2 verses. You are the chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you, second you, you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His wonderful light. Once you were not people, but now you are a people of God. Once you are not received mercy, but now you are the one who has received mercy from God. So I call these verses, the 2 verses together, I call them the It's You verse. It's You Bible text. Because God is calling our attention through Peter, saying, you are not just anybody. You are a chosen people. God had a purpose. Even before you were created, God chose you. And He's telling you, it is you. It is all about you. That's what God is making a statement to you, my brother and sister. You're not just any priesthood, but you are royal priesthood. Priesthood was the task of one of the highest tasks among humans, because that was a responsibility to connect the Creator and the creature in a going between the teacher, the master, who will tell each one how much is necessary for maintaining the relationship between God and His creation. You're not just any nation. You're not just any people. You are holy, meaning you are claimed by God as His own. God is special possession. That means holiness, because anything that belongs to God is holy. And it says here that you, the purpose of all this is so that you may declare the praises in your life, the way you live, praises of the one who called you out of nothing into this wonderful light, which is life. Once you are not a person, you are nothing, but God chose you and made you His own. And how He did that? By granting you the mercy that you need, by granting you the forgiveness, the grace that makes you special. Yes, my brothers and sisters, this text tells me that it is you. It's like Jesus Christ is appointed to you, says, I'm looking at you, kid. You are my kid. You are my special one. And He does this because of His love for us. The ability to be chosen, the privilege to be chosen, it is one of the greatest gifts that God has given to us, because He chose to make us in His own image. I like to call many of the moments that we have in life the It's You moments. And if you look back in your entire life and you look in your present, you do have quite a few It's You moments in your life. And that's what we're going to talk about. In order to describe the it's you moments in your life, we need to define what love is. What is love? We live in a society with a lot of divorce. The divorce rate has been so high. Many people don't even get married anymore. They just live together in fornication. They live together the way God did not plan to be. And that's why the divorce rate is not even higher. Because people are married according to the Bible, you know, not according to Caesar. They don't have a document, but they are living as husband and wife. And according to the Bible, that is not the way God intended to be. And when they separate, the statistics don't count them as divorced. So if we'll count all the separation that's going on now, the divorce rate will be sky high. Many people wonder, is there any true love anymore? Yes, some pessimists may say that. When all that we see is broken people, broken relationships, it is very difficult to understand what perfect love really is. Sometimes people look for love in many different things in life just to get themselves disappointed, frustrated because they don't find. There is only one place that we can really find the definition and understanding of what true love is. All of us seek relationships, friendships in our lives. All of us. It is natural. It's very natural to be social. We as human beings, it's essential for us to be social. We get that in our DNA. From the time we are born to be social. We celebrate love in many different aspects throughout all our lives. We all have quite a few it's you moments in our existence. From birth into our final rest, our lives impact others every day, every moment, and we are impacted by others every moment of our lives as well. One person wrote, and this is unknown because the person kept himself anonymous. He wrote, "What is love?" He said, "It is silence when our words will hurt. It is patience when our neighbors curt. It is deafness when the scandal flows. It is thoughtfulness for others' woes. It is promptness when stern duty calls. And then it is courage when misfortune falls." Understanding true love, we need to visit Bible's word, Bible scriptures. The scriptures. Because only scriptures provide us the best human definition what love really is. If you look in dictionaries, if you look everywhere, encyclopedias, every place you look, you will find a different definition of love. If you go through different cultures, some cultures, some languages, they don't even have the word love. I found that incredible. But there are some cultures in the world that they don't even have the word love. The concept of love that we have, the agape, it is actually a Christian concept that comes to us direct from God. Let's visit the apostle of love, John. 1 John chapter 4, verse 7. I'm reading New Living Translation. When I don't mention the translation, it's because it's the same as the one before, okay? So I don't have to be repeating. Every time I'll be using a new translation, then I'll tell you which translation I'm using. Now, the New Living Translation. He starts in a kind way, in a lovely way. He says, "Dear friends, let us continue to love one another, for love comes from God. Anyone who loves is a child of God and knows God. What he implies is, if you do not love, you're not a child of God because you have no idea what love is. In verse 8 of 1 John chapter 4, but anyone who does not love does not know God. And here is the first definition what he gives. He says, because God is love. In verse 12, now in a New Century Version, no one has ever seen God. Yes, no one. But if we love each other, then God lives in us, and his love is making us perfect. In his love is made perfect in us. In other words, the only way we can see God is when we, God's children, reflect the presence of love in us. Verse 16 of 1 John chapter 4. And so we know the love that God has for us. And we trust that love. And then he repeats again, God is love. Those who live in love live in God, and God lives in them. Many people try to accomplish a loving life without God, just to find themselves frustrated and disappointed, because God needs to be present in those that wants to love, because God is love. Verse 18 of 1 John chapter 4, when God's love is, where God's love is, there is no fear, because God's perfect love drives out fear. And then he continues by saying, those that have done something wrong, and they are fear of punishment, that's what fear is all about. He says, so love is not made perfect in the person who fears, because they are afraid of the consequence of their own doing, their own choices. But those that have God in them, then there is no place for fear. In 1 John chapter 4, verse 19, it says, we love because God first loved us. We can only learn love from him. Verse 20, New Living Translation. If someone says, I love God, and this is for 1 John chapter 4 still, but hates a fellow believer, I'll say you hate anyone, that person is a liar. For if we don't love people that we can see, how can we say that we love God who we cannot see? It's common sense. It's very simple for us to understand. How can I say that I love God that I cannot see, and then I don't love those that I can see? 1 Corinthians 13, verse 2. And all of you know that 1 Corinthians is the chapter of love. It's a chapter that defines love beautifully. I have never seen any definition of love as beautiful as Paul puts in 1 Corinthians 13. Not only he tells what love is, and he tells also what love is not. In verse 2, he says this King James Version. He says, and though I, Paul, he's saying, even though I have the gift of prophecy and understanding all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, and a faith so big that I could remove mountains. But then he says, but I have no God in me. I'm nothing. Oh, no, Pastor. My version says, love. Oh, but I told you before, love is God. God is love. So I think it's very appropriate for us to replace the word love here with God, because either way, it means the same thing. But If I do all those things, I pretend to be very religious, and I have all this knowledge, I read all these books, I have so many degrees, doctor this, doctor that, and I have all those degrees, but if I have no God in me, I have no love in me, I end up being just nothing, a pile of nothing. If you want to understand this concept, read Matthew chapter 7, verse 21, 22, and 23, when people say, oh, I am religious, we do this, we do miracles and everything else. And Jesus said, verse 23, I have no idea who you are. I do not know you. You actually don't have God in you. Because you perform all those signs and everything else, but all without love. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 14. Let all, and this is a commandment, let all that you do be done with love. Basically what Paul is saying here is, whatever you have to do in your life, make sure that it is God in you that is doing this. A motivation, the purpose of everything you do must be driven by the presence of God in you. So everything you will be doing will be with love and because of love. In Psalms 143, verse 8, Good News Translation. This is a good, a wonderful text for you to read with your children in the morning before they go anywhere. With your spouse before she or he leaves to go to work or to go to do any, for participating in an activity. Remind me each morning of your constant love. For I put my trust in you. My prayers go up to you. Show me the way I should go. Of course, this is the psalmist talking about God. But you can say this to your own spouse, to the people that you love. Remind me every morning of your constant love. For I put my trust in you. My prayers go up to you. Show me the way now in reference to God. My prayers go to you. Of course, we're not going to pray to, we're going to pray for their well-being. I pray for my family every day. I pray for my church every day. I pray for the prayer requests that I present to us every day. I'm trying to follow the commandment that God says, bring your prayers before me every day. And God will show us the way. Proverbs 3, verse 3 and 4, Good News Translation as well. Never let go of loyalty and faithfulness. Oh, those two things are so precious in any relationship. I will say, without those two, it's impossible to have any relationship. That's why Proverbs 3, verse 3 and 4 says, never let it go of loyalty and faithfulness. It continues by saying, tie them around your neck. Write them on your heart. Don't go anywhere without them. You know the commercial they said, don't leave a house without it. Don't leave your home. Don't go anywhere without loyalty and faithfulness tied around your neck, written in your heart. When you are in a relationship, in your relationship, if you're loyal and faithful, your relationship will last. If you do this, both God and people will be pleased. Yes, God and people will be pleased if you have loyalty, if you have faithfulness, because every relationship, and I know that I'm repeating myself, but every relationship will not last without loyalty and faithfulness. Colossians 3, verse 13 and 14, New Century Version, bear with each other and forgive each other. If someone does wrong to you, forgive that person because the Lord forgave you. The same way you want to be treated by God is the same way you should treat God's people. You know, we know very clearly what it says, what it doesn't say, in the Lord's Prayer. Lord, forgive my debt as I forgive my debtors. You know, forgive my trespass as forgive those that trespass against me. That's basically Paul is saying the same thing. If someone does wrong to you, forgive that person. Because that's the same kind of love that you expect from God. So whatever you expect from God, give to God's people. Even more than all this, clothe yourself in love. Dress yourself in love. Let God be the righteousness in you. Love is what holds you all together in perfect unity. Tell this to your family. Tell this to your spouse. Love is what will hold us together in perfect unity. It is God who, if God is manifested, if God is present in your daily life, your family will be held perfectly in unity. Ephesians 4 verse 2, New Century Version, always be humble. Oh, that helps. Always be gentle. That helps even more. Always be patient. Oh, that even better. And then accept each other in love. It is very difficult, almost impossible to have love when you don't want, if you are proud, if you're arrogant. As Paul says, there is no place for arrogance in love. You must be kind, gentle, patient. I have a quote here from Sam Levinson. He wrote this, love at first sight is easy to understand. It is when two people have been looking at each other for years that it becomes a miracle. It is when we know each other's fault that we learn to forgive. And by the way, those that forgive best are the ones who have love the less. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4 and 5. Here is Paul saying, love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous. It does not brag. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not selfish. And it does not get upset with others. Love does not count up wrongs that have been done. I replace it in my notes here, the word love with God. So I read like this. God is patient. God is kind. God is not jealous. It does not envy. God does not brag. He is not arrogant. God is not rude or cruel. He is not selfish. God does not get easily upset. God does not count our wrongs, but He is quick to forgive. Now you see, love in God is the same thing. Proverbs 10:12, Good News Translation. Hate stirs up trouble. Oh yes, the hate is the absence of love. So whatever God is not, trouble is present. But love forgives all offenses. You see, where love is present, forgiveness is triumphant. But where love is not present is only trouble. When you say this individual is a troublemaker, what it means is that this person does not care about anybody, does not have love, is not love that is driving this person's life. Trouble comes where love is not present. 1 Corinthians 13:13, very easy to remember. 1 Corinthians 13:13, it says, three things will last forever. This is a New Living Translation. One of them, faith. Second, hope. And third, love. And the greatest of this, Paul says, is love. Of course, because love is God. God is love. So, the greatest of all is love. Love brings us assurance. Love gives confidence. When love is present in the life of a child, the child grows with self-esteem, with purpose, without fear. The child will be a person who will develop in all sense of their capacities, all the gifts that God gives to the child will be well developed if love is the one who drives the growth of that child. I was 16 years old when I was reading a Bible for the first time. And as I was reading the Bible, I found a text that made a huge difference in my life. It made a very huge impact. Many verses in the Bible are wonderful. But this verse, at that particular time, was a key verse to turn my life around. And you found that in Isaiah 49, verse 15 and 16. I'm reading from the New King James Version. It says like this, "Can a woman forget her nursing child and not have compassion on her son, on the son of her womb? Surely they may forget." And I said, "Oh yes, they do, because I know by personal experience. Yet I will not forget you." And that touched me very, very deeply, because nobody until then has made such a commitment to have a relationship with me. I have been sent to boarding schools, orphanages, and, you know, I constantly felt rejection. But this time, for the first time, somebody told me that no matter what, I would not forget you. And I was not used to this kind of love. And I embraced it. And it changed my life. In verse 16, it says, "See, I have inscribed you on my palms of my hands." And I was familiar, because I was a Roman Catholic. I was familiar with the images of Jesus, you know, his hand pierced and everything else. So when I read this, that Jesus Christ now have my name written on his own hands, then I understood that I have no reason not to feel special. Then I had that "it's you" moment in my life. And that made me feel very, very good, and had kept me feeling good until this day. Jesus Christ said in John 15:13, New Living Translation, "There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends." I was talking to a vet, and he said, among soldiers, they really like this verse. This verse is very important to them. They says, "There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends." They said, "You know, there's no greater love than to lay down one's life for their buddies." And they are willing to jump in a grenade for each other. They're willing to become a shield, that many people do. They give their lives in order to protect their friends. In John 3:16, everyone knows, you know, this is so popular. We used to watch football, and we could see people trying to look for the cameras with a big sign, John 3:16. And sometimes the camera will even move it away because they didn't want to advertise that John 3:15. But we all know what it says there. It is one of it's you verse in the Bible. This is the verse that says, "For God so loved you that he gave his son, his only begotten son, that you who choose to believe in him should not perish but have everlasting life." Yes, this is one of the key verses in the Bible that says, it is you. It is all because of you. Now, coincidence or not, 1 John, also 3:16. We read this John 3:16. Now, 1 John 3:16 is almost a duplicate of the same thing. It's like John is saying the same thing. He says, "This is how we know what real love is. Jesus gave his life for us. So we should give our lives to each other, to our brothers and sisters." You know, like the soldiers like that text, "There is no greater love than to lay down one life for your own friends." Brothers and sisters, if you look back in history, when there was persecution, when people were giving their lives for their brothers and sisters, we will come to a time again that we must be willing to do the same sacrifice as Jesus Christ gave his life for us. We must be willing to give our lives to each other. Someone wrote in my Bible when I was baptized, I asked for an autograph for those that participated in their week of prayer, that it became so meaningful in my life. So I asked them, would you write your name here and put a Bible text? Raimundo, which was the organist and the pianist at that event, he wrote his sign, he gave me his autograph, and he wrote Romans 8:28. And he has no idea how much meaningful this verse has been in throughout my life. Because no matter how difficult things were, I came back to this verse and gave me the comfort to know that He has his eyes on me. He says everything is going to be okay. Everything, to those that love God, everything works together for their good. To those who are called according to God's purpose, God takes care of his own. So when God looks at you and says, it's you, he says, don't you worry, I'll take care of it. So every single time I have a situation in my life that I need that assurance, I went back to this verse and I realized everything is going to be fine. Now let me brag about a little bit here, okay? God forgive me, but I'm going to brag a little bit. I have a privilege, a blessing, to know the Brazilian culture very well. I was born there. One thing that people say, those that know the Brazilian culture, one thing that people say about Brazil is the Brazilian has a very positive outcome in life. We are always driven to see things in a positive way. That's a natural for a Brazilian. If you go to Brazil and you see somebody who have a very difficult day and things are so in a very bad, you look at the Brazilian will smile at you and will say, everything is going to be fine tomorrow. Everything is going to be okay. This is the attitude that we have to have as Christians. We have to trust that the one who loves us and has his eyes on us, he is saying to us, it is you, kid. I'm watching over you. Don't worry. Everything is going to be fine. On May 2nd, 1962, Gladys Kidd, K-I-D-D, placed a dramatic advertisement in a San Francisco Examiner. She said, I don't want my husband to die in a gas chamber for a crime he did not commit. I will therefore offer my services for 10 years as a cook, maid, or housekeeper to any leading attorney who will defend my beloved husband and bring him about his vindication and bring him home to me. One very famous lawyer, San Francisco lawyer, his name Vincent Hellinen. I don't know if I pronounce his name Hellinen. He saw the advertisement. So he contacted the woman. He told her, okay, I agree with you. I agree with your conditions. I'll take the case. That made her very, very happy. And even happier when actually the lawyer succeeded and the man was released from all the charges. He was free. The two of them came to visit the lawyer on his office and make arrangements for her to start paying her debt. The lawyer looked at them saw them holding their hands, and he told her, your husband is free, so are you. You owe me nothing. Go and enjoy your love, because I have never seen a love like yours. Love demands obedience. Love gives assurance, but also demands obedience. John 14:21, New Living Translation says, those who accept my commands and obey them are the ones who love me. Some people may say, oh, I love God, but they don't have no intention to obey him. Some children may say, I love my parents, but they have no intention to obey them. Children, if you want to show your parents how much you love them, obey them. As Jesus Christ says, those who accept my commandments and obey them are the ones who really love me. And because they love me, my Father will love them as well. And I will love them and reveal myself to each one of them. Jesus continuing in John 15:12, New King James, this is my commandment to you, that you love one another as I have loved you. Jesus continued, John 13:35, New Living Translation, your love for one another will prove to the world that you are really the ones that follows me, my disciples. John 14:15, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. Romans 12:9, Paul says this, let love be without hypocrisy. Do you know what the word hypocrisy is? In Greek, hypocrisy means to have many faces. And there are people in their romance, in their romantic life, they are a person they have many faces. They constantly pretend something. But Paul says, love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. In verse 10, New Century Version, he says, love each other like brothers and sisters. Give each other more honor than you want for yourselves. In chapter 13, verse 8 of Romans, Paul says, New Century Version, do not owe people anything. Oh, brothers and sisters, how many divorces, how many families have broken apart because people love things more than love people. He says, do not owe people anything except always owe love to each other, because the person who loves others have obeyed all the law. When you become a slave of your debt, that may break your relationships. That may give you stress. That may change your complete way of thinking. Do not owe anything to people except love. Matthew 5:44. But I say to you, love your enemies. By the way, that is the commandment. Love your enemies. Yes, God, Jesus Christ told us that we must love our enemies. And he tells how. Here is how. First, pray for those who hurt you. Second, bless those that curse you. Third, do good to those who hate you. So here are the three ways to love your enemies. Pray, bless, and do good to them. George Crane tells of a wife that came into his office full of hatred towards her husband. She said to him, I do not only want to get rid of him, I want to get even. Before I divorce him, I want to hurt him as much as he has hurt me. Wow. The doctor was very impressed with her convictions. So he suggested her an ingenious plan. So here it is, he said to her. Why don't you go home and act as if you really love your husband? Tell him how much he means to you. Praise him for every decent treat. Cook the best meal, the meals that he likes the most. Go out of your way to be as kind, considerate, and generous as possible. You spare no efforts to please him, to enjoy him. Make him believe you love him more than anything else in your life. After you have convinced him of your undying love and that you cannot live without him, then drop the bomb. Present him the divorce papers and tell him that you are getting a divorce. That will really hurt him. That will really hurt him. With the eyes very well open and full of revenge, she smiled and exclaimed, "Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Will he ever be surprised? Wow." And she did it with enthusiasm, acting as if was at that moment was actually happening. Then they made an agreement. You will come back in 2 months, and then we'll take care of the papers, and we'll sign the papers, and then you'll be able to present him with the papers. For 2 months, she went home. She showed love, kindness. She listened. She was giving, reinforcing, sharing. When she didn't return in 2 months, Dr. Crane's secretary called her and said, "Ma'am, are you ready now to go through the divorce papers?" "Divorce?" she explained. "Never. I discovered that I really love my husband more than ever. I am not, forget about divorce. It is him that is special in my life." Her actions had changed her feelings. She turned motion into emotion. The ability to love is established not by fervent promises only, but repeated and meaningful deeds. Is what you do that makes a difference. Is what you do that tells that person it is you. Ephesians 5:25 says, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." 1 Peter 4, verse 8, New Living Translation, "Most importantly of all, continue to show deep love for each other, for love covers a multitude of sins, a multitude of faults, a multitude of imperfections. If you have love, then love will cover the imperfections." A lady in Spain made the news when she chose a unique way, a strange, unique way to test her husband's love. With the help of a friend, she manipulated her own, she manipulated her own kidnapping and sent a ransom notice to her husband. But the husband called the police, and the police discovered that the whole kidnap was a hoax. So she and her friend were both arrested and brought before a judge. A judge asked the woman, "Why did you do it?" She replied, I wanted, Your Honor, to find out how much I was worth it to my husband. Yeah, all that she got from the experience was a time in jail. Romans 8:35, who then can separate us from the love of Christ? Can trouble do it? Hardship, persecution, hunger, poverty, danger, death? Romans 8:35, Good News Translation. There is a text in the Bible that when we think about love, it becomes a very strange text. 1 Timothy 6:10, New Living Translation says, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And it says like this, and this applies so much throughout the centuries, it applies today more than ever. It says, and some people craving money or loving money have wandered from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. Many people, because of money, they left the church. Some, they are still in the church, but only in presence. Why? Because they love the money more than they love God. They love more the money than they love God's church. Romans 8, 38, 39, Paul continues, a New Century Version, says, yes, I am sure that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor demons, nothing now, nothing in the future, no powers, nothing above us, not below us, not anything else in the whole world will ever be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. Do not love the world, my brothers and sisters, or the things of the world. If you love the world, the love of the Father is not in you. 1 John 2:15, New Century Version. You heard me saying this before. We live in a society that says, I love McDonald's, I love hamburgers, I love this, I love football, I love this. We love a lot of stuff that is just junk. When we say that we love things, basically if the word love means God, then you're saying that things are God in my life. We cannot love things. We cannot love food. Tell your children, teach your children. Don't let them go on think that it's okay to say to love those things because it impresses your mind. And whatever you say, you become what you say. And if you love food, and you put food and God in the same as equal, then you can say, what is wrong with my kid? What is wrong with us in this world? When we love food, we may not be able to love God because then we make them equal. There was a very unusual military funeral in California in December 2013. Sergeant First Class Joseph Gunt, who fought in both World War II and also in the Korean War, he was finally laid to rest. He was captured in North Korea in 1950. And nothing was known about him for 63 years. Nobody in the United States knew. With all sophistication, the intelligence services we have in this country, nothing was able, no information, nothing was known about him. But finally, after a long wait, our president at that time was able to negotiate and found out about him and about his remains, and his remains returned to the U.S. His wife, Clara, waited for 6 decades for her husband to come home. She regularly went to meetings with government officials seeking information about what has happened to her beloved Joseph. Clara even bought a home, and had it professionally landscaped, so when Joseph would come home, he didn't have to do any other yard work. He could go on fishing every time he wanted. She was 94 years old when his remains were finally brought home for a military funeral with full honors. It wasn't the homecoming that she dreamed of. But she finally knew what happened to her beloved Joseph. Clara told a reporter who interviewed her at the funeral place. "He told me," she said, "many decades ago, before he left, he said, 'If anything happens to me, Clara, I want you to remarry. I want you to go on with your life. You are free.' And I told him," she said, "'No, no, no. Honey, I'm here. I'm still his wife. And I'm going to remain his wife until the day I'm laid to rest beside him in a grave.'" True love, godly love, is not temporary, is not short-lived. Love is a commitment that is meant to last forever, because love is God. Is God in us. Love is not based on everything going right or always going happy. Love is not an emotional feeling, but rather is a choice of our will. Casual commitments do not produce a foundation for a deep and meaningful relationship. Instead, we should love others as God is teaching us how to love, as God loves us with unfailing love, without any reservation, a love that is capable to forgive, a love that does not keep record of wrongs, a love that is patient, a love that is lasting. In 1 John 3:11, "For this is the message that we, you and I, brothers and sisters, we have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another." We must love one another. "And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, with all your mind, and with all your strength." Mark 12:30. Common English Bible. And in conclusion, my brothers and sisters, I must say this to you. Tomorrow, a word love is going to go everywhere. Everybody will be talking about love. And then, sadly, things go back to the old routine. Remember what the Bible says, don't let love be hypocritical. Don't love out of hypocrisy. Love others as God loves you, so that you don't celebrate only tomorrow or today. But love is to be celebrated every single day of your existence. And if you have that kind of love, death will not keep you in the grave, because love is forever. And if you have God in you, you be with God forever. Love God with all your heart. Love your spouse with all your heart. Love your children with all your heart. Love your church with all your heart. Love your country with all your heart. Love those that God put in your life with your mind, your strength, all your being, everything in you should reflect the God in you. God bless.